Hey there, you're with Disembodied Podcast. This is Evie Escher. This week, my guest is Kara Daniels. She's the founder of Deep Root Connections, and she performs animal communication, land healing, and earth consciousness healing, among other services. As an animal communicator, Kara helps pet parents receive messages from their companion animals, whether living or in spirit, and she mediates human-wildlife conflicts by sharing the voices of the wild. She offers space clearing for land and home by working with the consciousness of the land. She works with its unique energies and helps restore harmony with the rhythms of the earth. She facilitates virtual workshops for anyone with an open mind and open heart who wishes to learn how to communicate with the seen and unseen with the aim of healing the land we live on. So we'll be talking about the spirits that infuse trees, plants, land, and even our pets that we spend so much of our time with. My goal is to have Kara perform some of her services in the near future, maybe a land healing for where I'm currently living. And we can dedicate an episode to what she encounters energetically while accomplishing that task. But for now, open your mind a little because, yes, the conversation is about to get weird or interesting, depending on how you look at it. Sit tight. Here we go. Kara, welcome to Disembodied Podcast. It's great to have you.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I'm really excited to talk to you about animal communication, which is one thing that you do, and also healing the land, which is another thing that's pretty interesting that you're involved in. So, like, how long have you been doing this and how did you get started in doing that?
Yeah, I've been a professional animal communicator for, 6 to 7 years now. And the land healing, I started really digging into that about 2 years ago. And I'm just now kind of finally understanding it to the point where it's like, yes, I can help people now. So the earth consciousness healing and land healing is, I've been doing this for about 2 years, but really more formally within the last year.
So did you always have an affinity with animals or?
I did. Yeah. So I grew up kind of in an urban environment, a little backyard, a lovely garden, and I would just go play with the caterpillars and the butterflies and the birds, and I'd always feel like I had to rescue everything. So if I found a stray cat or a stray dog, you know, they'd come home with me. And my parents hated that, but they entertained it because that's just who I was. And luckily, both of my parents were teachers. So every single summer, we would just leave town and we would go into the mountains and go backpacking and camping. And my favorite places were just kind of where the trees were and the creeks and the wild animals. And so yeah, I've always been really deeply connected to both earth and animals.
And so you told me beforehand when we chatted that you had a cat that kind of opened up the animal communication side of you. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah. In my late 20s, I kind of hit a wall in my career of what I wanted to do. I kind of just felt stuck and lost. I always knew I was supposed to be doing something. I just didn't really know exactly what it was supposed to be. And I kind of just gave up. I was like, okay, universe, show me the way. I give up. Like, I'm yours. Just tell me where to go. About 2 weeks after I had that thought and put that out there, the coworker of mine contacted me, said, hey, I have this stray cat. She just appeared out of nowhere. Can you please help me? I don't know what to do with her. And I said, yeah, of course, bring her over and I'll find her a new home. I can't keep her, unfortunately, but I'll help her. So he trapped her, brought her over, and I was like, oh, you're so beautiful, but you are really pregnant. So aww. Yeah, she was so big. And so I thought, okay, you're obviously due soon. I took her to the vet and they're like, yeah, maybe a couple of weeks. So I was like, okay, well, she can definitely stay at my house. She can be comfortable and have her kittens. And then we'll kind of go from there. Well, the 2 weeks turned into 2 months and I was like, oh, you're still here. Let's give you a name. And I just kept looking at her. I was like, what is your name? I don't know what your name is. And I can't think of anything. I just, for some reason, I could not come up with a name for her. After she had all of her kittens, we were just kind of sitting together one day and I was just looking at her. What is your name? And she immediately implanted her name into my brain. It felt like, I don't know, like she implanted it. it just came in a different voice. And she was staring at me like as if she was looking into my soul. And she was like, Samantha. And then all the little kittens, little voices were popping in too. I think one of them was Cyrus and one of them was Beth. Like, I can't quite remember the rest of them, but all these little voices and names were popping in. And I thought, oh my gosh, the cats just talked to me. This is amazing. I've hired animal communicators before, but for me to actually hear their voices, it was like a switch flipped in my brain. And I was like, I have to do this again and again and again. And so I started reading books and taking workshops and really deep diving into animal communication, which is partly why I opened up shop to help other people connect in with their animals, because I was like, this is just so amazing. I want to share this with the world. I want everybody to talk to their animals. And after I started working with clients, I learned how to do energy healing and a few other modalities just so I could be a little bit more well-rounded and help the animals. All of a sudden, the animals were talking to me about, well, my feet and my back hurt because I'm siphoning energetics from the land and it's not coming out of my body like it should. And I was like, wait, what? You're telling me that you're healing the land? And it's like, that just stopped me in my tracks. And I thought, okay, we're going to have to come back to that in a minute. So we did the energy healings, and the more animals I started to communicate with, like horses, cats, dogs, hamsters, even, they literally are working so hard to clear energy in the house and out of the land. And I thought, this is totally incredible. And so I started to learn.
I have a quick question. Why does the energy need to be cleared? Is it because of what people are doing?
There's many layers. So what I'm learning is that not only what we can see oftentimes needs some help, restoration, this and that, but also there are energetic layers that get stuck in the land. So if you think about the history of a place, right? I mean, there's war, there's toxins. Even if a homeowner abuses the animals there, like that imprint, the energetic imprint is there. So much like this is kind of how I think of it. Like a human body, if we have trauma, whether that be emotional or physical, and we don't really deal with it and we don't let it heal and pass through, it stays. And then it compromises our system. The same thing with the land, only the trauma gets held within the land we can't actually see. So like all of the residual energetics from like war or deforestation or, you know, anything like that where the land was abused, the trauma is still there. And so that's just like one layer. There's multiple other layers that can kind of come up. That's kind of what we're, that's mostly what the animals are dealing with and what I also help heal. And so once that gets released, it's like the vibration of the land can amplify and become whole again. So it's much like the body in that regard. So that's kind of what they're doing. And that's also what I'm doing.
So is there like a geologic side to this as well? Like there could be energy rising from the earth that needs to be released or something as well?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's portals and there's lines and water veins. I mean, that's getting really into the geological component of that. I don't work with that side as much because it hasn't really come my way. The energetics that I work with really are like, for example, earth energy. So there's portals or vortices that kind of swirl clockwise or counterclockwise. They can be big, they can be small, they can also be adjusted. So sometimes people live in a space where there's like this weird swirling energy and they don't really know where it has come from. And there's multiple reasons of where it can come from, even if it's just like an underlying water or an actual portal or a vortex. But those energetics can be shifted and healed to be a little bit higher vibration for people and animals to live on.
It almost seems like it would take a lot of people to shift this energy, because you're not talking about like shifting the energy of a human, which is relatively occupying a small space. But you're talking about like, you know, a vast space, maybe, you know, if you're even talking about like healing where a house is, that's a lot of space, and or healing like a community or something, that would seemingly take a lot of work.
It does. What I found is that it's not much different than working with an animal. I only do energy healing with animals. I don't really work on people, but it's the same concept. Instead of applying the energetic release to the animal body, it's with the land. And also the trees and the spirits of the land help me with that. So I'm not working alone. On the energetic planes, there's a lot of other entities helping me and kind of guiding me as to where I need to work and what I need to do specifically. But through intention, you can clear a whole land and a whole house. Yeah, it's really not that big of a deal or needing a lot of extra energy. Except for this is kind of the one thing that's also coming through is like, I can do a lot of the heavy lifting with the energetics, but there also is a physical component to it. So oftentimes, like the guardians of the place or the spirits of the land, like the trees or the stone beings, or even some of the elementals, like the fairies and the gnomes, they will have assignments for their people or the homeowners or the landowners. And they're going to be like, this is what you're going to need to do in the physical to continue healing. So it's energetic and physical. So it's kind of two parts. It's a group effort. So yes, it is a group effort, but the energetic component, usually I can handle most of it by myself.
And how do these spirit beings work in concert with humans that are unaware of them?
Usually, well, it depends. Oftentimes they're just out. Most of the time they're not in the house, I've noticed. They are just doing their own thing. They kind of stay out of the way of the humans. Most of the people that I work with and my clients are generally kind of energetically sensitive, whether they can tune into the other realms or not, but they can feel things. And so part of what I help people do is to connect in with the beings on their land so they can continue the relationship. But it is really kind of a self-guided process. It's like, if you're going to be working with me, we're going to be working with the spirits of the land and I'll help you get there. But yeah, most people that call me totally know something is off or know something is there. They just aren't really sure what. And so once they understand what it is or who it is, then they can start building a relationship.
So I would imagine there's a big difference in energy where there's a built environment as opposed like a man-made environment, like with streets and buildings. You know, I live in an apartment complex myself. There are trees around and stuff like that. And there's a lot of animal activity, squirrels, owls, raccoons and such. But I would think that the energy and the elementals and the spirits that are out there, I would almost think they're more active where there's some open land. But what do you think about that?
I think it depends. Well, yeah, I would say I think it absolutely depends. There are some areas that are highly developed, but they hold so many elementals and the trees are alive and working really hard. And it's like the vibration of that space even still is potent and you can feel it. And part of that too is just the way things are developed. It's like if there were earth honorings, if there was respect to the land, you know, the vibration is going to stay high. The elementals are going to stay there. The trees are going to be more willing to hold the space. Versus, for example, I was working with this woman. She has this house in a newly developed area. And it's just like one of those areas that's getting flattened with houses where like most recently it was kind of sagebrush and wildland still. And the guardians of space are just like, we don't even know what to do. We don't know how to help our people. We don't know where to go. And it's like, there's just like this blanket of sadness over that whole space on the elemental realm or in these other realms. And it's just like, how can we bridge the gap? Because they want to help us. Even if we are developing, they just need to know their role. They want to be a part of humanity's evolution and creation, whatever we're doing. But there's definitely a disconnect there. And so, yeah, it just depends on how the land is being treated when being developed.
I feel like a sterility with certain newer places where there's heavy building. And I feel like a sterile environment. I always think of like, people are going to hate me for saying this, but there's a city nearby called Irvine. And it just is a very built up commercial area. Yeah, there's housing there too. There's some pretty neighborhoods where there's kind of like a pond and places to walk with a lot of trees, but there's a lot of like roads going through it and just commercial areas with tall buildings and stuff like that. And it feels very sterile. I always have this feeling like there's just nothing, you know, nothing to tune into. There's just a bunch of cement and asphalt everywhere because the streets are kind of big. And then over where I am, it seems a little bit better. It's a little bit of an older neighborhood, perhaps. I don't know why that would make a difference, but it does. I pick up on that a little. And then there are other areas. I really loved Pasadena when I lived there because it was so full of really old trees with canopies over the streets. And there was like a very positive energy with all those trees everywhere. And then there were some palatial estates where wealthy people had built houses back in the 1920s, whatever, early 1900s. And they just had these beautiful like gardens that are still being maintained somewhat and beautiful grounds. So there's a lot of separation between houses in certain areas there. And it just had so much more character. And so it wasn't just the pretty houses. It was just the nature of the place felt really balanced and kind of happy. When you drive through it, even it's like, oh, it feels happy here. And then you go to a place like Irvine and it's like, ah, this is like an example of a bad energy, too much building, too much commercialism type vibe.
Yeah. Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about with the sterile kind of feeling, and there's no life there. Yeah. Everybody always just kind of like vacates the area. Even the soil itself has been basically nuked. There's nothing there. There's no vibrancy in that. And it's really sad. But I do understand what you're saying too, is like certain places hold, I call it magic. I love to live in my magical world, but it's like some places you visit and it's like, oh my gosh, it's so wonderful here. It's like the vibration is really high. I can just feel my cells vibrating with excitement. And it's just like, you can totally feel an area that still holds a lot of the consciousness of the earth, really, that they're all still there. I recently went to Glacier National Park. I don't know if you've ever been there, but it is just one of my favorite places. You absolutely should go. It's a beautiful space and it's just the trees there are fantastic. But I was with a group of people, all kind of intuitive and earth tenders also. We were just doing this little walk around and everybody was just literally in awe because they're like, this is such a magical place. And you can just feel it. And you could feel the trees alive and watching you and the little spirits in the ferns. And it's like, you can just feel the magic there.
And this is in Alaska?
This is in Montana.
Oh, Montana. Mm-hmm. Okay. When I think of a glacier, I always think of Alaska.
Yeah. No, this one's in Montana.
Oh, yeah. I can imagine that's beautiful. I love forested areas myself. We don't have too much forest around here where I live currently, but I have a plant like a philodendron and it's pretty small. I bought it a month ago or so, and I've been giving it a little bit of iced tea with no sugar and it's liking it. I had some older iced tea. I didn't want to just like throw it down the drain. I don't know why I do things like this, but I thought it's probably got a tiny bit of acid in it or something that the plant might like. And I'll just see if it vibes on iced tea. I get this energy with it. It's a she type energy and it loves the iced tea. It kind of like fans out its leaves and it looks very relaxed with the iced tea. And when I give it water, it was a little more in an awkward leaf constellation type position. You know, we'll see. I should probably, you know, switch off between regular water and iced tea. I think I'll do that. But I just notice weird things like that with plants. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is just one little plant, one tiny one, but with trees, you get such a, I don't know, like a feeling of peace sometimes when you're around large trees. How do you interact with them on a regular basis?
Oh, the trees. Oh, I love trees. Yeah. So I live in a really forested area also. Lots of lodgepole pine and Douglas fir, which, you know, they don't really talk to me as much as other types of trees like the cedar groves. But usually when I'm out wandering around the forest, it's really a wander. Like I usually don't have an agenda. It's just kind of like wherever I'm going to go is where I'm going to go. I just kind of get led intuitively. And I don't just sit there and talk to all the trees by any means or touch them all. It's usually just wandering, appreciating everybody, whoever is there. And usually one of them on my walk will kind of stick out to me. And in which case I'll usually go up to it. And it's always a heart connection. It's like my heart is the magnet and it will like pull me in certain directions and where I'm supposed to go or where I'm drawn to. And usually certain trees will just kind of pull me in that regard. And it's like, I can feel their energy. And it's usually just so, it feels like a hug. So when I go up to these trees, for example, I'll either sit several feet away from them and just be in their presence. Sometimes I'll sit right up against them if I feel like they want that. You know, trees are kind of proud beings. They don't always like to be touched, but they like to be acknowledged. And so I'll touch them with the palms of my hands or sit with them and send them love through my heart. And sometimes I'll channel. If they have a message to be shared, I'll channel a message and then I'll share that with whoever is willing to listen. But other times I work with the trees, like for land healing specifically, like they'll tell me, well, this is what we're doing in the land. Can you help me by doing this, this, and this? And so there's that kind of interaction also. But usually it's just a mutual respect. And if I can share messages from the trees, I do.
I'm amazed that they are having good feelings about humans. You know, I feel that's like a gracious side of these beings because, you know, we do cut them down constantly and, you know, people carve on them. Trees aren't always treated very well. They're treated like an inanimate object. You know, it's kind of a resource that's squandered a lot of times. You know, sometimes people will just uproot a tree in their yard because they don't like it or something. It always makes me feel sad. Like I have a hard time throwing away even like a dead plant. I always think I should have worked harder to revive that creature, that thing.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, not all trees are graciously open-hearted and welcoming to people. Some of them, I mean, they're personal. Like they each have their own individual personality. So some of them literally are just like, I want nothing to do with humanity. I'm going to be doing my work right here. I'm doing me. Like, please stay away. And some of them really actually are upset with humanity because they're like, why can't you help us? Or like, why can't you help yourselves keep the earth in better state than it is? It's kind of in ruins right now. And so a lot of the trees really do harbor kind of sad. It's mostly sadness that I feel from them. It's like, just, they want us to succeed and reconnect with nature and just see them for who they are and respect. And it's like most of them don't mind being utilized. And I think that's something that gets really confused when people start to connect in with nature and realize that there's a little bit more than what may meet the eye at first. But it's like they just want respect. They want to be recognized. They want respect and they want to be asked. It's like some trees are vacant, like they don't have an indwelling spirit. And if you go into an ecosystem and say, we need wood for something, who wants to participate in this project? The trees will literally be like, yeah, me, I'm down, like, come chop me down. And for whatever reason they want to go, maybe it's to help the ecosystem there. Maybe they are not feeling very good or they're ready to move on and be part of a different project. And so using wood is, you know, it's part of what we do. It's just the lack of respect. And so that's what the trees are just asking for. It's like, can you just recognize us and like ask us and talk to us? And yeah, that's really all they want.
And do you think that the elementals and the animals out there with the trees, do you think they're working harmoniously or?
Yeah, I think the ones that are kind of out of the loop are people. I think everybody is working together on behalf of the earth and the ecosystem and the place. And it's just people are missing the, they're missing the boat.
Well, I mean, I'm always encouraged that there are people like you that seem to have some awareness of more of a complex consciousness to the world, to this earth. It's not just humans having some consciousness. It's good that you see the layers of beings and that we could work together. It's possible. But this is a big thing to push out because I think we're so caught up in our people problems that it's hard for a lot of people to even tune into what's happening to animals, even let alone trees and everything, you know, every other being out there.
I think so too. I do feel some hope. I feel like a lot of people are kind of coming back to the earth and asking questions and wanting to reconnect. And I honestly have tons of people that reach out to me and they're just like, thank you for sharing what you're sharing, because now I can make sense of so many different experiences that I had. And so it's like, so many people have these experiences. They just need to know that it's real and they can take it farther if they want to. And so it's like, I do feel like there's a big chunk of people that are out there, but they're quiet. And I don't know, I just hope that people find their voice and start talking about this more regularly and get traction and get this more out to the world. Because I know that the trees and the elementals, they all want to work with us. They want to help us restore the earth and they want us to reconnect in this way. So it's big. It definitely is big. And it's hard when, you know, you have real life and everyday things to do, like grocery shop and pay your bills. And
right.
Yeah. So
well, I think we talked about this a little bit before that there's kind of a difference between intuition and receiving messages. And, you know, I was telling you that I have some birds, miniature parrots, and I have one bird, a blue and gray bird that is, his name is Rumi. And I did get a message from him recently. I don't really feel like I get messages from the birds all the time, but I intuitively kind of know what they're needing. I at least try to tune into them a bit. And he tells me that he's getting bullied at times, especially when there's a communal food dish out and the birds are supposed to share it. He gets mistreated. And so I have to protect him. And, you know, at times I was thinking, okay, this is my intuition. I'm seeing that he's being mistreated. But then other times he would just come up to me and I didn't know what was going on with the food dish. And I would get a message from him like, hey, the other birds are being mean to me. So how do you train people to tune into this? Because, you know, I wish I got messages from my birds every single day. I really feel that I don't. I feel that I can kind of tune into what they need most of the time. But there have been times, I don't know, when I've had animals in the past where I don't think I was totally tuning into what they needed, even because somehow I was misinterpreting some of the signs that they had. Like my one cat threw up a lot. I didn't really realize it was connected to her heart problem. It took me a long time to figure that out. And like, how do you encourage people to tune into their animals more?
Yeah, well, I think it starts with intuition. I think a lot of the people that come to work with me to learn animal communication, it's like they are intuitive, but they don't listen to themselves. They don't listen to that intuitive hit, whatever it may be, you know, a heart flutter, just an inkling or a knowing, whatever it is, they're just not listening to it. And that's kind of step one, is to one, just find quiet space in your mind, set the intention out that you want to connect in with your animals or whoever or whatever. And, you know, really start paying attention to what is happening in your body on the intuitive level. And then once you start paying attention to that, it's almost like everything gets a little amplified because you're giving it permission to be accepted. And you're saying, yes, I see you. I understand what this is. And then it's like, okay, well, if you're getting, you know, this part of it, let's give you a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. So I would say definitely just to start out, find quiet space and listen to your intuitive hits. Set your intention to communicate with one of your animals and have a specific question out there in mind and see what comes through. It might take a day. It might take 2 days. They might come into your dreams. Or what happens a lot of time with brand new students is that they're kind of in a sleep state where they're like kind of awake, but still kind of asleep. That's prime time for animals to be like, hey, this is what's up. And then they'll go out because you're in a receptive mode. And so pay attention to that time too. So if you set the intention, ask them to give you a specific message and then just kind of wait and see what happens.
I would think even like when you're drifting off to sleep, you can think of like petting your animals, feeding them their favorite food or something. Just have that in your mind and it maybe facilitates some telepathy.
Yeah,
because your animals are somewhere around you, you know, somewhere in the house, ostensibly, unless they're outside, like in a farm situation. But I sometimes have dreams about my animals, not too much, but I think I myself am going to try that where I kind of drift off to sleep and think about them more because you can bond with them in the astral realm. I think it's probably easier when your animals are skittish to bond with them. Like birds tend to be very skittish. Certain animals tend to have that skittishness. And so that's probably a good idea. Just drifting off to sleep, like you said, that is a great time to interact. Or even maybe when you're waking up in the morning and you're in that liminal state, try to focus on your animals.
Yes. Or another idea too, is if the focusing on the animals isn't working, just focus on grounding. But have that like intention out there. I'm going to ground, but I'm opening my space up for my animals also. And so you're really going to be inward and conscious of what's going on. And that also opens up your space to receive. So even if you're not quite getting to that really sleepy kind of point, or even if you're just out and about during your day, ground your energy, put your intention there, but also have it out there with your animals. Like, hey, I'm going to be receptive when I'm grounding. Come in, come say hi, because they can feel the energetics shifting with you and they can kind of time their attack for a message to come in right when you're receptive. So that's another tool to use or thing to practice.
That's a good idea. And what practices do you have from day to day that sort of would be more spiritual, like to keep you grounded or, you know, just to keep you more at peace?
So I have a little wildflower garden that I created. It's crazy right now because there's birds everywhere and butterflies, and I kind of let it do its own thing because it's supposed to be kind of wild. And I will go out there at least 5 times a day, and just that's how I ground my energy. I go take myself on a little garden tour, see what's changed within the last couple of hours, and just sit there and just put my energy into the dirt there and talk and literally just be in the moment. It's not like I'm actually trying to talk to anybody unless they're there and they want to, but that is basically my religion, is to go tour my garden multiple times a day. And also to wake up with the sun and go, not necessarily go to bed with the sun, but I'm always up for sunrise. And I always start quieting down when the sun sets. And so I try to make it an intention to go outside and watch both of those phases. I think it's really important to, I don't know why, but those times kind of open up the liminal space. And to me, it's like, it's just so healing to be part of the sunrise and sunset.
Yeah, that's a good point. I feel like tuning into that is probably a stress reliever as well. You know, mm-hmm. there is a time for daylight and activity, and then sunset, you should be tapering off your activity. Mm-hmm. It's like the Earth's cue, the solar system's cue to relax versus wake up.
Yeah. I do try to meditate, but honestly, I'm awful at it. So I just try to do my quiet time when I'm out in the gardens or just looking at the sky. It's always outside. Just going outside intentionally is kind of the thing that I do the most.
Yeah, I think that's good enough. I mean, you know how to bring your consciousness into things and like tune into them. So, I mean, that's good enough. I mean, you don't really have to always meditate separately. It sounds like your garden is a meditation. It's kind of a meditative endeavor. And then walking out in nature might be a little bit meditative as well.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of a common misconception people have too, is like, in order to meditate or get into the space of receptivity, is you have to sit and meditate. And it's like, for people like me, like, I can't do that. I need to be active. I need to go do things. I need to look at things. And it's just like looking at a flower can put you in that space so quickly, just being in the present moment. And so that's something I always like to share too, is like, you don't have to sit and meditate and try to turn off your brain. Find something that you enjoy and do it that way.
Yeah, I think a great way to connect to nature is to appreciate it, because one of the things I love doing is looking at all the little wildflowers. If you go to a park or, you know, some open area, and you can see just this minute, beautiful detail, even in the tiniest of flowers, you know, it's almost like they're hand painted. They're so beautiful. Even that appreciation, I think, opens you up to maybe some sort of subtle communication between the earth and what's going on out there in that space that you're in. And it can be very calming and soothing. And yeah, I wish people could do that more, because we get so locked into our built environments and the energy is not always very good, especially with Wi-Fi. And there's so many different things going on. There's a frenetic energy in a home sometimes, in a building. And it's so good just to, like, even on your lunch break, maybe if you have to work in a building, just get outside and like appreciate natural things. Yeah, you could even walk barefoot maybe. I don't think people do that much. We've talked about that on the podcast, where people go out in nature and just walk barefoot a little, because it tends to get rid of a lot of negativity, a lot of negative energy.
Yes, I would recommend everybody be barefoot if they can be, as often as they can be. Absolutely.
I go to the beach, I guess, sometimes, mm-hmm. and then I'm barefoot. And I do like that feeling of sand underneath my feet. But yeah, I don't do it too much as far as walking around, even in parks, because there's animals and, you know, I don't know.
Who knows, right? Yeah, some places it's like, oh, that's a little sketchy to walk around barefoot.
Well, I'm thinking about dog poop and just to put it in a blunt way. So what do you think is out in the universe? Like, do you see that there's like a God in the universe, or do you see that it's just kind of beings doing their thing, running in a sort of mechanistic way?
Oh, that's a big question. I mean, I don't think that there's a God, right? Like this one almighty being that's just like, this is, I can't quite get there. I think it's more of a Team effort. I really don't know. I mean, I really don't know. I can only share what I have experienced personally. And I feel like there's many, many, many layers that we cannot even comprehend. Like, I have channeled some of the star beings, for example, like the Pleiadians, and they are part of my team, like my spirit guide team. And so I feel like there's a lot of different beings out there that I've connected with that actually want to help people too, but that's a topic for another day. Maybe there's like the angelic realm, there's guides, there's, I mean, if we want to get really esoteric, some of the animals alone in the afterlife, I do mediumship with animals too. And it's like, what are you actually doing? Like, where are you? And they just share with me, it's like, oh yeah, well, we're going to go into this other realm and this other planet in a totally different universe. And it's like, I can't follow you because I don't even like, I can't, like my little brain can't even go there. And so it's like, there's so many different layers out there that I don't know.
It's kind of complicated. And I feel like committing to some concept of God is almost limiting it too much. You know, I feel like I don't know what to think of the concept of God. Sometimes I felt like when I was younger, I did know what God was a little bit, but that was only informed by some religious experience, you know, in my upbringing. But I moved away from that because I don't like God as a he. I'm not down with that anymore. Not down with it at all. And I definitely think a religious text, which is, you know, like the Bible, which is cobbled together, many manuscripts cobbled together, basically. I don't think it's very informing as to what God is. I think that it represents widespread beliefs from various groups, actually. The Bible is an amalgamation of a lot of different people's thinking and religious experience, but it's not really defining anything for me. Except that I do believe in angelic realms, and I do believe in the various tiers of beings, but the God thing is difficult even for me. It's like, I've always been spiritual, but connecting with the spirit world doesn't necessarily create some framework about God. It's just, you're connecting with other beings, just like I'm connecting with you. You're another being. So that doesn't mean that it defines God at all, just to connect with other beings.
Yeah. And if there is a God or an entity, he, she, it, whatever, is probably just part of everything else. You know what I mean? It's like, I just can't imagine there's one overarching something that is like the umbrella over everything else. It's too big. There's too much out there for one entity or one being to be kind of the one. So, and also, I have no religious background and I have not studied anything. So everything that I've kind of come to understand is just through working with the animals and through working with nature and kind of my own experience. And I think that personally weighs more than studying from a book or from somebody else. I think, like, really, this is a personal journey for everybody to explore.
How do your family members and your friends accept what you're doing?
Yeah, I am so lucky in that regard. I have the coolest family. They're just like, okay, you're doing what now? Okay, tell me more. Can you teach me? And so, like, my parents have been supportive of me from day one. They're just like, they want to learn. So they're always in my workshops trying to figure it out too. And I have a great support system. And most of my friends, honestly, I'm kind of like a close-knit person. I don't have a huge network of friends because I like just small, intimate relationships. And I mean, my very best friend when I met when I was young, she's actually the one who kind of ignited my spiritual connection, like, to begin with. So she's always been kind of my second hand and helping me stay motivated to keep going when it gets hard. Yeah. And my partner, my husband, he's just like, I don't really get it, but I trust you and I know you and I know that you're a good person and whatever you're doing is helping people. So you keep doing you. So I've been extremely lucky in that regard to have such a great support system.
Yeah, that's wonderful that people are not picking it apart or telling you not to do it. You know, I think that's great.
Yeah.
I have one final question. What do you think people can do to help their animals? Like, what's the big complaint with animals, you know, that are kept as pets? Do you see that they're not getting the right food or they're not getting the right attention or the right activities? Like, what is the complaint with animals from their side?
Yeah. Well, a lot of them really don't complain. I think the thing that we miss a lot of the time is like we're their caregivers. So we want to do the best that we can for them, no matter what. And it's like if you love them and you're giving them, like nice enough a place to live, food, water, that's all they need. They're here for us. And I think that's the biggest thing that they want me to share is like, it's like, we're here for you. Like, we have our soul missions. We're here to learn certain lessons too, but like, we're your partners. We're here for you. So it's more of just a, can you start listening to us? Can you start recognizing us for like the lessons that we want to teach? And sometimes we're mirroring something to help you see what you're doing to help you heal. And it's like, honestly, that's what comes through the most. It's like, hey, mom, I see you, but it's not about me, it's about you. And so oftentimes when I'm talking to these animals, it's like, but we want to talk about you right now, not your mom or your dad. So really, the biggest thing is they just want a deeper connection with their people if they can. And as far as like the food and stuff goes, it's like sometimes they complain that it's bland. Sometimes they don't care. It just really depends on each animal and what they want to share.
Well, I'm always encouraged by the number of people who have told me that they really try very hard to find the right foods for their pets. And, there's, if you go to the pet store nowadays, there's like the dog food section alone is like mind-boggling. It's like aisle after aisle of different types of dog food. A lot of them, are a little bit more informed. A lot of the pet food manufacturers are a little more informed these days about what to put in them. It's encouraging in a way because I feel like people are taking animals a little more seriously. The presence of the animals in their lives is being taken more seriously, like a family member rather than just this thing, this object that is in the house.
Yes, and the food is its own entity. I think another thing that I just want to talk about since we're on food is like so many people, while they do try the best to feed them the right food, I mean, it gets really confusing or financially, maybe they can't do like a raw diet or a home cooked whatever. And it's like a lot of pet parents hold themselves accountable. They're like, I just can't do it, but I want to. And so they always hold this layer of guilt because it's like, I want to do better, but I can't. And it's like, your animal is okay. Whatever you're doing, if your decisions are based out of love and with their best interest, that's all they need. That's all they're asking for. And so it's like, you do the best that you can for them, and they're going to love you anyways, and they're going to appreciate it. And so it's like if you are holding guilt, like maybe I should do this. Like for my dog, he has an ear infection. I need to switch his food again. And we've been doing this for 7 years. It's like I cannot figure it out. And he's always like, it's okay. Like we'll get there. Just keep going. Just keep trying. Or it's just like, give up. I'm fine. It's like, no, I'm not gonna give up. But it's like just doing the best you can is enough. And I think people need to hear that.
I think there are different ways to get pet food. Sometimes people make their own pet food. Dogs are kind of omnivores. They're not true carnivores like cats. So you can sometimes make stuff, even with a little vegetable content that would be suitable for their stomachs and not make them sick or anything, and that would be nutritious. So it's, there are so many good people out there that are putting out like dog food recipes, cat food recipes. And, I myself have moved away from bird seed, and I try to cook quinoa for my birds, and I sprinkle a little bit of crushed seed and a little bit of bird protein powder, sometimes a little bit of egg powder because birds actually do eat eggs on occasion. But I mean, I've gotten more in tune with the stuff that I can make for them rather than going to buy a bag of something. I try not to do that so much. I try to think, okay, in the house, I've got broccoli, zucchini, and they love that stuff. They go bonkers on broccoli. They just gnaw on it for like hours. So, I mean, I'm giving them like the best food I can think to give them, and hopefully they like it. But I think if people realize this, that you don't always have to go to a pet store to buy the food, it can sometimes come from your kitchen.
Yes. Oh, what book is that? The Forever Dog. Have you read that?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, I think it came out last year. It talks about what you can do as a pet parent, depending on where you're at, what you want to do, what you can do. And it's like, how can you modify their food to help them live longer? And it's like, if you're feeding dry kibble, literally just sprinkle a few berries on top every meal or something. And so it's like, it gives you different types of stages. Like if you're going to do the home cooked, there's a whole recipe book for you. And then there's like somewhere in the middle, if you're going to do half and half, or if you're just like trying to maybe figure it out and you're at the very beginning stages, it's a great book for people that are just like, well, I don't really know where to start or what exactly are you talking about? And it's like, that book is great. It's eye-opening and it gives you useful action steps.
Yeah, that's practical. I like that.
Yeah.
So what services do you provide for people before we wrap up? Because I want to make sure people know what you're actually providing these days.
Yeah, thank you. I am offering animal communication services for those currently in physical bodies, as well as those in the afterlife. I also have a special package. It's called Peaceful Transitions, and that is specifically for those at the end of life. And so I do have a package deal where it's like, we'll walk you through the process. We'll ask your animal what they need, what they want, what you can do. And it really helps the transition for everybody. I also offer Earth Consciousness Healing, which is the land healing, where we tune into the energetics of the land and the home. And it's kind of three parts. I'll release any energetics that don't really belong there, see what kind of beings are on the land, channel messages, and then create kind of a package of this is how you can connect in, this is how you can continue the healing. And with the energy healings or the land healings, it's multifaceted, many layers. It's usually two or three sessions in one. And because like my goal at the end of it is to get the client to be able to do it on their own. And so I might do some heavy lifting up front, but then by the end of working together, it's like, you got this, you could do this. You can call me anytime, but like, I want to give you wings and I want you to be able to do this too. So that is another part of what I offer. And then I do energy healing with animals also to kind of go backwards. And I'm offering workshops. I do workshops usually twice a year, and that's animal communication, working with your wild guides, whether that's the wild animals, looking at nature, or those in the elemental realms. And I'm thinking of the other two I'm thinking about right now that I might launch, nature communication, definitely, working with the trees specifically, but it's open to kind of all of the nature. And then working with the spirits of the land. So I usually do packages or single classes kind of throughout the year just to help people start learning and tuning in.
And is the land healing, is that only on site that you could do that, or could you do it remotely?
Almost all of my land healings are remote. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Maybe I need some land healing. I might have to call you for that.
Yeah. Oh, it's always so much fun to see what's going on and who's there. And then the people are always like, yeah, I totally thought that that room was kind of funky. It's like, well, yeah, because you have a friend that lives there. Or there's something weird going on. Or sometimes there's like an antique table that has energetics. And they're like, I thought that table wanted something. Yeah. So who knows what's going to come through in a land healing. They're always so different, but it would be fun to work together.
That's so cool. Well, I'm going to have you on again, because I kind of feel like we only scratched the surface of this. I would love to have you on maybe 6 months or so from now, and we could do another discussion, maybe more in depth about land healing or nature communication or whatever, because it seems like we're glossing over some things. But I thank you so much for coming on and sharing all of this information with us. And we'll leave a link to your website in the show notes for this episode.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Blessed listener, please leave your questions or comments for this episode at disembodiedpodcast.com. Cheers.